You're listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent in Birmingham, Alabama, a church with a heart for the gospel. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.
Gracious Father, open our eyes so that we would behold you. Guard us and keep us and draw us closer to you. May this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here today and kind of have the opportunity to delve into my art history again, and also a great reason to watch Father, Son, Sister Moon. Isn't that your favorite? So, yeah, that's the Life of St. Francis, 70s. If y'all ever need some 70s nostalgia, go to that. It's great. So I'm going to be talking today about, I'm going to try to argue at least, the connection between Giotto and St. Francis. And also his connection to the artist Masaccio, who's a little bit later in history. So I'm starting out here with a painting that is by Giotto, and it's depicting the death of St. Francis, and it's in a Franciscan church in Florence. And there were several frescoes that Masaccio painted for this particular church. And I wanted to introduce who St. Francis is when looking at this particular image by Giotto. It's painted in the 1320-ish, 30, so it's a little bit later in Giotto's career. But so to talk about who St. Francis was initially. So St. Francis was someone who was born of from a very wealthy family. They were merchants in the cloth guild. And so in his 20s, he has a couple of life-threatening experiences and then kind of has somewhat of a breakdown, I guess you would call it a breakdown. After that, which he begins to really want the freedom of Christ. It's one of the things that he's talking about. And the method that he does to attain this is that he rejects his family's money and actually takes on a life of wandering, of homelessness, and ends up living in a chapel outside of Assisi that is in a state of ruins. And he has a vision there, and the vision tells him that God wants him to repair his church that is in ruins. And Francis takes this quite literally, and he begins to wander around and find rocks and actually rebuild this church that he had basically been squatting in. And he begins to have a following of people, of men, and also St. Clare is someone who also begins to be associated with him very frequently. So they take on this manner of poverty. It's called the simple rule. It was poverty, chastity, and obedience. And he also begins to, again, negating his where he came from economically. He takes on this robe, which is of a very rough type of wool, like that all the peasants actually would wear. And he began to, with his followers, began to nurture the poor, especially those that were ill, that were poor. And so at age 29, he actually travels to Rome and makes a tremendous impression on the Pope and his audience with Pope, and is immediately granted the ability to start an order, a Franciscan order. So he does this. This is 1210 when he begins the religious order, the Franciscans, ultimately, he goes to Rome. He goes to Jerusalem and tries to kind of help with the Crusades. So this man has had a tremendous impact on the people that were around him, The fact that he, and one of the things that he was really rejecting was the materialism of the church and the ceremonies, the materialistic nature of the ceremony of the church, and particularly, you know, just like vestments and that kind of thing. Anyhow, so he chooses this life of severe poverty, obedience, and chastity. Begins this order. It's still intact today. So, I mean, it's amazing impression that this man had. So, okay, so I just want to, hello, sister. Okay, so he challenges the materiality of the church. And one of the things that really aligns him with the artists of the Renaissance and of Giotto specifically is that he loves nature, and he is a Christian humanist who says you don't have to go to church in order to find God, that God is everywhere in nature. And this thing really is a watershed moment for the people that are around him and subsequent generations. He actually holds a live nativity scene. That was something that he did. And he also had the blessing of the animals. So there's this intricate connection between himself and nature, as it is with Giotto, which we'll soon look at. So this is a Giotto painting. Some of the innovations that are happening here, this is a detail of this fresco. Fresco is a water-based medium. It's painted on wet plaster. Typically, you have to paint very rapidly in order to execute what you're trying to do. So he's turning the figures around, which is something that was new at the time, so that they're actually acting as we do. They have volume, they have light and shadow, something that's called chiaroscuro. And so they are looking more like us than what preceded them. Oops, sorry. So this is a painting that was done like within 10 years of St. Francis's death. So St. Francis, he dies at the age of 45, so he didn't live a tremendously long life. This painting is done by a very well-known artist of the day. His name is Bonaventure Berlinghieri. Say that four times. And it is done in something that's called the Italo-Byzantine style, or it's called the Maniera Greca, or the Greek manner. And it's speaking to a very strict adherence to Byzantine icon paintings, okay? Which are typically, they do things like this, elongate the figure. They're not supposed to actually look like they're sitting on the ground. The way that it's done in a hieratic way, which means it's strictly very symmetrical, you know, there's not any kind of visual tension. And then, so elongated St. Francis, he's got this elongation in this thing where you pin your hands back, which is odd. If you look at his feet, he looks like he's about to slip off his pedestal. And a heavy use of gold. There's not any kind of natural light. The same is the case with, this particular painting, also in the Italo-Byzantine style. And this was painted by Cimabue. And it is 1280. So this was within the life of Giotto. Giotto was born in 1267. And I'm going to read a little bit about the connection between Cimabue and Giotto in just a moment. But like what I was talking about, Italo-Byzantine style, you all probably recognize way that this is happening. If you are going down Claremont Avenue and you pass by the Greek Orthodox Church, looks very similar. It's a prototype, meaning that in order for the images with this idea, for the images to actually have authenticity or power, then they needed to actually adhere to elements within the Byzantine prototype, what was done early on in the church, and then repeated over and over by the artist, okay? So that's kind of what's going on here. There are some innovations with Cimabue. I'm not going to rob him. There's some space down here in the throne, But you got, you know, this elongation, what's this looking of sorrow of the Virgin Mary, the tilting of the head in this odd way, really not physically possible. All of those things are coming from this prototype. Okay, so this is Giotto's nativity scene. So this was in, okay, so Giotto was born 40 years after the death of St. Francis, okay? So, and the Franciscan movement at this point was really rolling, right? So there's really no way that Giotto, given that he's painted St. Francis later in his life, but when you're looking at this, that he did not know of the work of St. Francis. It's just, and he's also using a manuscript that was a Franciscan manuscript that was looking at the life of Christ. Okay, so this is Giotto's nativity scene. One of the things I'm going to be talking about is how Giotto kind of straddles the old and the new, the Byzantine and the and what is the Renaissance. And sorry, I keep on doing this. And then this is a detail here. Okay, so it really gives you the power of the intimacy. So I'm reading from The Lives of the Artists by Vasari. I'm going to try to. Okay, so, and when he had reached the age of 10 years, showing in all his ways, though still childish, an extraordinary vivacity and quickness of mind, which made him beloved not only by his father, but by all who knew him, Bodoni gave him the care of some sheep, and he, leading them for pasture, now to one spot and now to another, was constantly driven by his natural inclination to draw on the stones or the ground some object in nature or something that came into his mind. One day, Cimabue, going on business from Florence to Vespignano, found Giotto, while his sheep were feeding, drawing a sheep from nature upon a smooth and solid rock with a pointed stone, having never learnt from anyone but nature. Now, this is Vasari, and he was very eloquent. Cimabue, marveling at him, stopped and asked him if he would go and be with him, and the boy answered that if his father were content, he would gladly go. Then Cimabue asked Bodoni for him, and he gave him up and was content that he should take him to Florence. There, in a little time, by the aid of nature and the teaching of Cimabue, the boy not only equaled his master, but freed himself from the rude manner of the Greeks and brought back to life the true art of painting. Okay? And what he is alluding to in terms of the true art of painting is the Greco-Roman art of the Italian past. Okay, so I'm going to be talking a lot about that. So here we have this wonderful nativity scene that's in the Arena Chapel. And this detail, I keep on doing this wrong, but let's see. So, so you have one of the things that's happening here for us, I just want to point out that there's a lot of erosion that has happened to this fresco, because a lot of the mantle of the Virgin Mary was painted al secco, which means it was dry, because there was this precious material of lapis lazuli and ultramarine blue that was used. So that's some of what is the distortion that's going on here. But some of the things that Giotto is doing that is very innovative is that he's using it cinematically. I mean, he's using the picture plane as a photograph, which becomes sort of the rule of Western painting in general, this idea of verisimilitude. We're kind of stuck on it. Anyhow, so he cuts things off, like they're emerging in from another place. He's turning the figures around, you know, in space, so that we, like the viewers, we're turning around and we're participating in it just as those that are depicted in the image, okay? I said that he's kind of a straddle, you know, he's straddling. Like, we've got things like this, Joseph, who this is coming from a Byzantine prototype. Joseph has always been, you know, represented like this. He's very sad. He's kind of pitiful. But the inclusion of the ox and the ass is also something that is prototypical, and it's making a reference to Isaiah 3:1, okay, which talks about the ox and the ass do you want to read it? No, never mind. That's okay.
How big is that?
This painting, I'll show you. You'll get a sense of it in just a second. It's a fresco painting. It's on a wall, so it's pretty big. Okay, so some of the things that are stuck in the past. But here we have landscape. Didn't have a landscape before. Here we have, you know, volume. We've got darks and light, chiaroscuro. Okay, and then the amount of intimacy between these figures is something completely new that had not been seen in the Italian, the Byzantine manner at all. The tradition is the swaddling cloth just is making a reference to the shroud of Christ. Look at the animal here. I mean, Giotto knows these animals in terms of the way that he's rendering these animals. So this comes from this is an amazing place in Padua, Italy, and it is completely painted by Giotto, 1305 to probably 1308. He had 40 people that were working with him in order to execute this. So the entire chapel is painted, and some things are being resurrected, like what's called faux marbleization, where, you know, you make things actually look like it's stone. It's painted. It's painted here. So we're looking towards the altar here, and then we're looking back. If you were to turn around and you're looking back towards the exit, you know, the entrance exit of that, and it's a depiction of the Last Judgment here, which is really wonderful. And actually, he and Dante were friends, and Dante drew from this particular image when he was writing his Inferno. Apparently Dante was kicked out of Florence, and he came and visited Giotto in Padua when he was painting this series. So just briefly kind of want to go through what's going on here with iconography. Okay, so what's happening is it's devoted initially to the Virgin Mary, just very much like a medieval thing. Oh, sorry, so it's not working. It's okay. So up on this rim are the depictions from the life of the Virgin Mary. It ends here with the Annunciation scene. Then you have scenes from the life of Christ here. And then finally, below here, are scenes from the week of the Passion. Okay? This, when you're looking down towards, you obviously have the Last Judgment. But in the ceiling, there's all of this stuff that's going on, all this, you know, integrated iconography. You have Christ, who is surrounded by the four evangelists, and then more towards the door, you have the Virgin Mary surrounded by four prophets. All of here, we've got these little, they're a French form, it's called a quatrefoil, but all of this is painted. It's painted to look like inlaid stone. And in these quatrefoils are figures from the Old Testament that are making comment or have significance to the images that are being painted here. All of this, okay, so these are virtues and vices that are painted in this area here to look like it's stone. That's called grisaille. Very ancient tradition in Pompeii. They were doing the same kind of thing. And then this faux marbleization, which was called the first style of Pompeii painting, where they were, I mean, contemporary artists do this now in households, you know. K.E. Mack, she did that. I don't know if y'all know her. Anyway, so faux marbleization. So he's doing that. And I mean, if you're trying to faux marbleize, it's abstract painting, you know, it's abstract painting. So I think that's pretty cool. last little remnant here, I just want to point out that Scriveni, who is the person who commissioned this, he was the individual who obviously was a very wealthy man. He is on the side of those that are saved, and he's presenting a copy or a rendition of the chapel itself. So it's like, this is my penance. Here's my chapel. Look what I did for you. And this is a portrait. So this is early on that there's actually, 1305, there's a portrait that's being included in this work of art. So if you ever have the opportunity to go here, this is amazing because it's like a depository of Giotto's paintings. Most of his work has been lost, painted over, St. Peter's, when they redid it in the Baroque time period, they took out the apse, which had a series of paintings by Giotto. That's what happens. Okay, so I'm just trying to move on because I know that my time is limited. So this is also from the Arena Chapel. And some of you, it's probably confusing because of the color, because the color in this particular image is very different from what I've been showing you. It's because it was cleaned in 2001, very much like what they did with the Sistine Chapel. They cleaned it, and it's very different. So I forgot to mention this with the iconography and the integration of the iconography. Michelangelo most certainly was aware of this. There are drawings by Michelangelo of Giotto's paintings, so it's well known. Also, what I'm talking about, that he knew St. Francis or the work of St. Francis, he was using Meditations on the Life of Christ, a Franciscan document, to paint these paintings. All right, so the adoration scene, again, he's doing some of the same things that I've been talking about in terms of there is a monumentality of human form. That is a classical thing. If you look at the Manera Graeca, they look like they're very long and they're stiff and they don't have this monumentality. That's a very Greek thing. You're having the skiagraphia. He's using the picture plane as a stage, basically. You have this figure here, which is a foreshortened human figure. He's one of the attendants of the Magi. And this was something that had really not been seen for hundreds of years, this quality. And there's no way that you could have done it without observing from nature what's going on. I don't think Giotto had ever seen a camel. Just because if you look at the ox and the ass, he knew those animals. And there's another image of the escape to Egypt and the donkey, the ass that the Virgin Mary is. It's just so delicate and sweet, Anyway, so this is a just beautiful. All right. This is the last one that I wanted to show you because this is the example that we use to really kind of talk about the innovations of Giotto in art history. So this is part of the third tier of paintings. It's taken from the week of the Passion, and this is the betrayal of Christ. So here we have Judas, who is coming and giving the kiss to Christ. And the look of Christ in this image is so compassionate. It's amazing. And Judas, I love the way that this line here is this frowning. He knows he's not doing something that's right, right? Anyway, it's just this intense. And so Giotto here he's using all the compositional elements here to focus us on the main event, okay? In art terms, that's something that's called commensurability of parts. All things come together to create a united whole. So if you look at the Parthenon friezes, or you look at the metopiece, everything is united together. So he is using like the spears in the background. He's using the color of the darkness of the figures as against these highly lit objects to really bring all of our attention there. The gestures, St. Peter over here cutting the ear off of the person, and this guy pointing, and then the use of color as well. Okay, so we're cropping the figures in space. We're turning the figures around so that we're participating. There's this commensurability of parts, monumentality of human form, chiaroscuro. All of these elements are coming from the Roman past. So I know that Giotto went to Rome for 3 years before he painted this particular panel. And there was an artist whose name is Cavallini who was working in this way, but there also were Roman sarcophagi. There were Roman paintings. There were mosaics that were based upon paintings that had all of these elements in them. So Giotto was looking at these things for sure. Lastly, this color, not only does it grab our attention, but yellow is also the color of cowardice. So, yeah. All right. So, I hope I can.
Yeah, there's one guy going in the other direction.
Which one?
So you have the one just beyond the knife to the left.
Oh, him. I don't know. Gil? You?
Well, he's not, since they have a halo, he's not one of the disciples. This is Peter cutting off his ear.
It could have been some of the Romans.
Maybe coming over here to try to stop Peter or something like that. I don't know. Yeah.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
Thanks.
What's going on here? Pulling in, I love what you said, how innovative it is. Mm-hmm. He's pulling from outside the frame.
Yes, it's just like trying to pull someone in, I suppose.
We don't even know who or what's going on here. Yeah.
And the feet are literally on the ground.
Mm-hmm. The shadows on the feet, everything else, just pretty remarkable.
Okay.
Can I just say,
Yes.
This is just, when she showed me this, gosh, there are a lot of people in here. Show me this first time. Go to the next one. I mean, the intimacy. Phenomenal, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And this is 1305. And then here they are, like you said, the furrowed brow, just the tension, and just the.
And then this, the way that the face is in the background.
Yeah, everything coming. This looks just like Ron Perlman, by the way. I told Paul that the other day. but how it comes in here, and then just the chaos of everything else that's going on, and the heaviness that's coming down. Everything points in there. I'm just mesmerized. As somebody doesn't know a thing about commiserability and everything else that you do and that he did, and it makes it happen so that you just have this emotional reaction that moves me to tears. Mm-hmm. When Jesus is saying, I will die. I will die for you. The color of cowardice being brought forth with just the highly reflective, highly reactive interaction with the light that's coming from outside. I mean, all of it just lends to the moment of the kiss.
Close-up of the beard is amazing.
Yes. I know.
Look at that.
Yeah. I know. Okay, I'm going to move on, y'all, because we got some good stuff. But what happens after this? Because there really sort of is like a halting of all artistic activity for about 50 years. The plague took about a third of the population out of Europe. So Giotto, one of the last works that he does, and y'all have all probably traveled to Florence, is he was not only a painter, but he was also an architect, and he built the Campanile that is adjacent to the cathedral in Florence, and he wrote that he wanted it to be far enough from the cathedral that it was independent and pedestrian. All right, so the next artist that emerges at the beginning of the 15th century, right after Giotto, and carries on his legacy is Masaccio. Okay, and this is in a place in Florence that is called the Brancacci Chapel. And there is a series of frescoes by Masaccio that is painted here. And I'm going to show you them, and then we'll talk about them, because I know Gil really wants to talk about the expulsion scene. So this is Giotto, and he is sort of the legacy to to Giotto. He carries and expands what Giotto had actually done in the 14th century. Unfortunately, Masaccio dies at 26. So he arrives, he kind of like independently arrives at the in Florence, in the guild of the painters in Florence, and he registers as an independent master. Where he got all of this knowledge and painting, we don't know. But he obviously had, you know, he has it. And so this is the baptism of the neophyte. It's in the, this particular chapel was intentionally focused on the work of St. Peter. And I'm not going to go into why, but if you want to know why, I'll be happy to tell you. But anyhow, so it's St. Peter who is baptizing the neophyte. And guess who's there with him? That is Masaccio. Isn't he wonderful? So Masaccio was a nickname, and it was actually the way that it translates. This happens with Italian artists a lot. Like, anyway, it translates as the messy one or the ugly one, because he cared so much about his art that he didn't really care about anything else. And also, I mean, at this point in time, sorry, Gil, I'll get there. At this point in time, there was the Guelph and the Ghibelline parties in Florence, and he was very much on the side of the more plebeian Guelph party than of the more higher upper class. So the baptism of the neophytes, remarkable for a number of reasons. There's certainly this monumentality of the human form. You have something that's called, you do have chiaroscuro, but it's actually light that follow, you can tell where the light source is, and it's casting shadows consistently. And it's taking place in the Apennine Hills outside of Tuscany. So he's landing it in his particular location. And the water itself is transparent. And there's also the inclusion of Masaccio in the line to be baptized with the neophytes, which I love. I think it's so wonderful. Okay. So also in this particular chapel is this particular, this affresco painting that is depicting the expulsion. And one of the most harrowing images of the human experience and the extinction from the garden that I know of. And one of the things that I think is so impressive in this is this figure of Eve, in that he was known for being able to just abbreviate the brush marks of his painting. And in this abbreviation, he was able to reach this emotional content that is not really available through like really tiny articulation, that there's an abstraction that's being used in order to get at this content. Okay, Gil.
I don't know what to add. I mean, this is just, I don't know why this grabs me the way it does. I mean, there's the inward and the outward, where Adam has his hands just covering the source of his senses, where Eve very feebly trying to cover her body, and so it's the inward shame that Adam's trying to hide from, as it were, or is just kind of capitulated to, and then Eve, the whole of us, you know, the image of God, he created them, all of us now, her feeble attempt to hide her outward shame, and just, we can't do it. I mean, we're just exposed now. I mean, just utterly and completely exposed, and it makes me weep. It really does. I mean, this is one of my top 10 sort of emotive pieces that I'll kind of connect with. The brusqueness, I mean, here it's almost hollow, and just what you bring to it, Cumby, to talk about the abstraction, I mean, it just connected with me, it makes sense, because he's not, she is, and again, there's the two sides, which pull it all together. I'm just kind of interacting in this, and it just, the brightness, which just says, you know, we're just on, like the light is on. And there's no hiding. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it makes me hungry.
Oops, sorry. I'm doing that.
For help.
this kind of, and also because this is like one of the first nudes that we have post-classical period, right? I mean, as with the baptism of the neophytes, they still have the loincloth, but this is, and in the Greco-Roman world, it was called the heroic nude. Typically, the athletes and everybody, you know, would be, this is not a very heroic nude, you know. So, Masaccio taking this known model and then reverting it. Okay, so I know that this is probably not fair, but we're going to go again. This is, as it is Advent, I chose this painting by Masaccio, and it is, it's a tempera painting. So it's very different. It looks different simply because of the medium itself. Tempera is literally egg yolk that is being used as a medium. So can you, and it when it dries, it has a kind of a hardened casing glassiness to the surface of it. But it's very different from an aqueous water-based fresco painting that you've got this large area to cover. So this is a predella. It was intended to be below a number of paintings that Masaccio executed for a church in Pisa. And in the 17th century, that church actually fell under disrepair, and they cut up the painting and sold Masaccio's to different places. So they're in different places all over the world. This one is in Germany. And it's a depiction of the adoration, obviously. So we have the ox and the ass, which are traditional, obviously. We have the Virgin Mary, who is on like a temporary throne. It is gold, but in the medieval times, these type of thrones would have been taken from province to province. So it's sort of making a nod to his kingship. You have the three magi that are greeting the Christ child. Never before have we seen a Christ child like this. If you were to look at the Cimabue Christ child, it looks like an old baby. Masaccio was really fascinated by babies, and like his Madonna and child that was above this, Christ actually has his fingers in his mouth, and he's grabbing the grapes with his other one. So he was obviously looking at children and the behavior of children. And the same here, but I mean, this is a fat baby. He's well fed. One of the things, you know, artistically that's happening with this particular painting is that Masaccio is actually getting this relationship of color, like a reflection of the blues and the reds that are being done here, which is another thing that's from observation. This man is one of the older magi. This is the sort of the middle magi, and then this is the younger magi. And they all, he's using them compositionally in order to create the focus that's on this, the Christ child. And one person I was reading, they said that the light is not coming from the Christ. And I'm like, you're wrong. Because if you're looking at the where the light is coming from, okay, you know, all the shadows are being cast here. So it would, you know, it would have to be that it's coming from. This is something that he took liberty to do, the light here, so that you could see the ox and the ass over here. He's using sighted perspective, he's using aerial perspective in order to create this sense of depth. If you look at the way that the landscape's handled, the things that are in the background are a different color, so it gives you this idea of recession. And he's using a grounded light source. And these two guys, which everything is kind of leading to these two guys, are the people who, this man is the notary who commissioned the altarpiece, and his first cousin, okay? So, and, you know, apparently, you know, these younger people are wearing these red stockings. They must have been fashionable at the time. But this very severe kind of understated costume. And then the way that he's foreshortening the horses, the attention, like this is something that would happen naturally. A horse is, you know, not interested in the main event, is bending down. This guy's trying to pull him back. He's using color to compositionally frame all of this. So, masterpiece. Anybody want to comment on this painting?
Those are portraits of those two guys. Mm-hmm. Also.
Mm-hmm. Any comments?
One of the horses looks pink.
It does look. Mm-hmm.
That's
but the way that it's foreshortening, cutting off, you know, cutting things off, taking the crowns off, which is something that's very typical. Joseph has his gift here. The other gift, there's only two in this panel, is being held by the attendant over here. Okay, so do I have time to show the last slide? Do I not? I do? Okay, so this is Botticelli. So this is 1470. Masaccio, unfortunately, died 1428. And Vasari writes about Masaccio as like he came into existence where there was severe competition going on in Florence because there were all these great painters, which there were. There were a lot of great painters that were at the very beginning of the Quattrocento, you know, that were there. Masaccio being one. Donatello was somebody that was super influential to Masaccio. Anyhow, he was more of a sculptor. But here we have Botticelli, and he's in what would be called the third generation, and by that time, things had become much more elegant than with Giotto or with St. Francis, in that this is no longer the representation of the Guelph party or the working class or the poor, but this is very much depicting the wealthy class. And the Magi, with that, are actually the Medici people. So this guy is Cosimo de' Medici over here. Lorenzo de' Medici is on the side over here. And then Botticelli is right here, looking out towards us like, look at this, y'all, I painted this painting, isn't it good? And this isn't different, a new type of medium. It's oil painting, and it is completely broken from what was traditional representation of the adoration scene. That there really, you don't have the ox and the ass that are here. You have more people that are populating this, and you have the inclusion of the ruins of a temple rather than a cave. And so this is obviously making a reference to the scripture that the temple will be destroyed and I will restore it in 3 days. So this, and then there was another reading last week that was about the destruction of the temple, that was about the vanity of human life. Mm-hmm. And so that obviously would also be making a reference to this as well.
Joseph looking pitiful again.
Joseph. He just, you know, he's still there. You know, he's, I mean, he, yeah. And in some early Byzantine icon paintings, which is really interesting, is there's this figure that's dressed like in a goat shirt, kind of, and it's apparently a tempter who was talking to Joseph saying, you really think this is a virgin birth, you know, and, you know, how could this be possible? But which is part of what was truly happening to poor Joseph. Anybody else want to make any kind of comments? I feel like I've run a race. Paul? No? Okay. Well, Jeanette? She migrated from St. Luke's. And I'm honored that she did. Anyhow, it's been a lot of fun. Gil, do you want to add anything?
Give thanks and say a prayer.
Yeah.
Do you want to say something else?
Mm-hmm. Go for it.
Lord, thank you for coming, for what she's brought to us. Let your word go forth and continue to do its work in each of us. Prayer for Christmas. In Jesus' name.
You've been listening to audio from the Cathedral Church of the Advent. If you live in Birmingham or find yourself visiting, we hope you'll join us for one of our Sunday services. Find out more at adventbirmingham.org.